Mildred Harnack, a young woman from Wisconsin, joined the German resistance to Adolf Hitler and became the only American woman executed for treason during World War II, on Hitler's orders. Her heroism was well known at the time, but after the war her story was forgotten. Until now, in the publication of a fascinating new book on the subject, Resisting Hitler, Mildred Harnack and the Red Orchestra by Shireen Blair Breisach. Welcome, Shireen.
Hello.
Well, how did Mildred Harnack, an American graduate student from the Midwest, get involved in German resistance?
In 1926, she was teaching at the University of Wisconsin, where she met and married a Rockefeller scholar from Germany, Arvid Harnack. They returned to Germany, and when Hitler came to power in 1933, they immediately saw that this would be a disaster for Germany and formed a group of like-minded individuals to resist Hitler.
This immediately in 1933?
Right away. They had, naturally not been, they were from the left, they certainly hadn't voted for Hitler, but, they had read Mein Kampf and knew that this was going to, what was going to transpire if Hitler got into power. And in short order it did.
That's very early in terms of resistance.
Yeah.
What does the phrase, by the way, Red Orchestra, in your title refer to?
Now, the Harnack and his other friend and colleague, Schulze Boysen, who was the other kind of leader around whom the Red Orchestra was centered, never called themselves the Red Orchestra. This was a name given to them by the Abwehr. The Abwehr is German military intelligence. And the Abwehr habitually designated an enemy radio networks whose signals they were picking up as orchestras. The designation Rote, that's red in German, referred to the Soviet radios that were spread throughout Europe in Brussels, Switzerland, and Berlin. And these radios were sending messages to Moscow. The organizers of these orchestras were called by the Nazis conductors. The radio operators were pianists, hence Red Orchestra. The Harnacks and their colleagues were passing information on to the Soviets. This the Germans knew about because they intercepted some of it. But they were also passing on material to the Americans, and they never found this out.
Why would they pass information to both the United States and the Soviet Union?
Because they were leading a resistance group. They were not agents of the Soviets or the Americans or anything else. They are usually portrayed as Soviet agents because they passed on military information to the Soviets, but they were for helping anyone that was an enemy of Hitler. They had good contacts with the Americans. After all, Mildred was an American, and she was very close to a circle of people, women and men, in the American embassy. And there was one young man in this American embassy who was the first secretary, a man named Donald Heath, who was their contact. And they passed on all the information that they later were giving the Soviets also to this man, Donald Heath, who passed it on to the State Department and to the Treasury Department. They didn't pass anything on to the British. They didn't have any contacts with the British.
This was fairly common in that time period, as I recall from my reading, where people who were opposed to Nazi Germany didn't particularly pick one side or the other, because we really weren't in that opposition between the United States and the Soviet Union during the 30s. That sort of came later. But let me ask you, in terms of her involvement here, are we talking about the Red Orchestra as a spy organization or as an organization of resistance?
It was definitely an organization of resistors. As I say, starting in 1933, they gathered about them a group of people on the left, social democrats, communists, primarily, and they would meet, and then they would do a lot of resistance activities. Now, one has to remember that their all news in Germany was controlled by Goebbels' propaganda ministry, so they would put out leaflets, they would spread speeches of Roosevelt, which were not being given in the German newspapers. They helped Jews. There are four cases of we know that are documented of Mildred getting Jews out of Germany. They did this sort of thing. And it wasn't until 1938 that they started to help the Americans, and then in 1940, just before the Germans invaded the Soviet Union, which was in June 1941, did they actually start with what we would call espionage activities.
So what they did and how they did it changed over time, I suppose, in response to what Hitler was doing.
Right. The other thing that's really important to remember was that the when they were dealing with the Soviets really wanted them to give up the resistance activities because they were so important in terms of the military information that they were gathering, that the Soviets felt if they were picked up as a resistance group, you know, doing leafleting or any of these other activities, and they were exposed, it would jeopardize all the other activities. But Harnack and Schulte Boysen insisted on continuing these activities.
Interesting. Well, how'd she get caught?
Well, they got caught through the Soviets, who really screwed up. What happened was that they were providing this information initially in 1942 to the NKVD, that's the predecessor of the KGB, resident in Berlin, a man named Alexander Korotkov, and they were actually handing, they weren't handing documents so much as they were telling him what was about to happen, that the Germans were going to invade and why. This is all documented extensively in the book. And they, when the invasion actually happened, they knew it was going to happen in May, right before, he left them with two radios that they were supposed to then transmit messages to Moscow, but he left them without any trained radio operators. And what happened after they sent one message in June, the radios were silent for several months, and the Russians were so desperate to get information from these people that they transmitted to their agents in Brussels a message in code, but in that and asking them to send somebody to Berlin and contact Schulte Boysen and Harnack, and they gave the addresses in that message. And that message, although it was encoded, eventually, to make a long story short, the Germans captured these radio operators, they tortured them, and eventually broke the code. And once they broke the code, they had the names and addresses of these people in Berlin, and that happened in the summer of 1942. And at first they watched them. They of course, observed them to see who they were in contact with, hopefully that they would pick other people up. But by the end of August, August 31st, 1942, they arrested Schulte Boysen in his office in September. They arrested the Harnacks.
Now, Hitler almost directly intervenes here to get her executed. Why was he so concerned as to what they were doing that he would himself get involved?
Well, you can imagine with two high-level people, Arvid was high up in the economics ministry and Schulte Boysen was an adjutant to Goering in the Luftwaffe ministry, that he was really upset that these high-level people had turned out to be Soviet spies, what he saw. And he was also in the midst of the worst battle. This is the battle for Stalingrad with the Russians, and which the Russians finally won. And so this was all being played out against this battle for Stalingrad. So he reserved, this was very unusual, the confirmation of the sentences in these trials for himself. Now, Mildred was tried in the initial trial of 19 people who were the main people in this Red Orchestra. And she was tried, and she was only given 6 years of hard labor because they thought, well, she was only a wife. She should have known. She knew about it. She should have turned him in. But then what happened was that this sentence was sent to Hitler to confirm, and he wouldn't confirm that sentence. So he said he wanted a retrial. Well, that was the signal that she should be given the death sentence. So she was retried and given the death sentence and executed in February 1943.
How did the United States respond to all of this?
Well, they really couldn't do anything. After all, we were at war with the Germans anyway. So and also, the trial was kept secret from the Germans as well. This was not a public trial. Even the families were told that they were not to mention a word about it, because what they were trying to do, the Germans, they were playing something called the Funkspiel, the radio game. These captured Soviet radio operators were transmitting messages to the Soviets, and the Soviets were sending back more information. So they wanted to continue that game, so they kept all of these trials secret.
Did the United States make the trials public at all?
No, never until after the war did it come out what had happened.
Okay, and speaking of after the war, they did make it public at that point, but then it was forgotten. Why?
Yes, well, immediately after the war, when the story came out, there was an attempt, particularly by the University of Wisconsin, to remember her. And the U.S. Army also opened a war crimes investigation into the case, claiming that she had not been given a fair trial, which was absolutely true, and that torture had been involved, and she'd been treated very inhumanely. All of this was, of course, true. However, when they discovered that they had been passing information on to the Soviets, and they were most likely communist, they quickly closed the case. And you have to remember that we're talking in the late 1940s, when Senator Joseph McCarthy was on the rise in Wisconsin, his home state.
So we get into the anti-communist issue here, and they didn't want to raise that.
Exactly. Okay. And, of course, her relatives in the United States didn't want to press. The FBI, as we know now, had already opened files on them, and they were under suspicion, and they were fearful for their jobs, so they dropped it.
Interesting. Well, let me take you back to the story here, because there's another interesting character. Who was Martha Dodd?
Martha Dodd is the sort of subsidiary heroine of the book. She was the daughter of Roosevelt's ambassador to Germany, William Dodd, and she arrived as a 24-year-old in 1933 and proceeded to seduce almost anyone who was anybody in Berlin. She seduced the head of the Gestapo, the head of the Deuxième Bureau, that's the French intelligence, Ernst Udet, who was like the number three person in the Luftwaffe, the Crown Prince Louis Ferdinand, and a number of diplomats and newspaper men on the side. But finally she fell in love with a Soviet diplomat, Boris Vinogradov, in 1934, and they carried on and off-again love affair. He was sort of being transferred throughout Europe. And in 1937, they asked Stalin if they could be married. And they never got an answer from Stalin, but Boris was brought back to Moscow and tried for his troubles and executed. But while she was in Berlin, Martha, now remember she was the daughter of the American ambassador, offered her services to the Soviet Union, and she was accepted. And so she returned to the United States, and she kept up these Soviet contacts. But the Americans were really on to her. It's too long a story to go into here, but it's detailed into the book. And she was indicted on 3 counts of espionage in 1957. And you have to remember again that the Rosenbergs had just been tried and executed. So rather than face a trial, she first fled to Mexico, and then when it looked like she was going to be extradited, she fled to Prague, where she died in exile in 1990. So it's a really interesting sort of side story.
Oh, so she never was returned to the U.S.?
No, the case was finally dropped in 1979 because all the witnesses had died. But she and her husband owed so much in back taxes that they were afraid to come back to the United States, so they never did.
Interesting. Okay, was it difficult to resurrect this story? I mean, what sources did you use to do your research?
Well, it was very, very difficult. It required 6 years, numerous Freedom of Information requests. I had to obtain the CIA, FBI, and military intelligence files on the Harnacks and Martha Dodd. Then I had to get material from the East German, Soviet, and Czech archives. This was only possible after the fall of the Berlin Wall, naturally, and the end of the Cold War. We're talking between the period between 1990 and 1998, when I got the last of the files that are in the book. But fortunately, I started interviewing people in 1989 when I began because many of these people who actually knew the Harnacks were in their late 80s or early 90s. And in fact, I sometimes felt like the Grim Reaper. I'd interview them only to find out they died moments or months later.
So it sounds like you got involved in the story just in the nick of time. In another couple years, it probably couldn't have been told.
No, I couldn't have interviewed people. And of course, if I'd finished the book earlier, I wouldn't have gotten any of these files, the KGB files on the Harnacks and Martha Dodd, which really, although they didn't change the actual thrust of the story, they certainly reinforced by documentation. I knew exactly what had been given to the Soviets and what had not been given to the Soviets.
Well, it's a wonderful book. It's a real history mystery, and it keeps you turning the pages to find out what's going to happen. And we noted at the start that you do some award-winning documentaries. You've done some in the past for TV. Are we going to get a documentary out of this book?
Well, initially I started the... it was going to be a documentary and not a book, but there was so little actual footage to put on the screen, and people were so elderly that it was going to be problematic even then. However, there is a man named Stefan Roloff, whose father was picked up in connection with the Red Orchestra affair. He's a German from Berlin, and he's making a documentary which may air on American television, will certainly air on German television, and I've been helping him with that. And there, I just met another young documentary maker who's Swiss, who also wants to do something. So I suspect there will be some, at least one documentary.
How about a straight-out film, like a Steven Spielberg film?
Well, yeah, I actually see it as sort of a Thelma and Louise against the Third Reich, the Thelma and being Martha and Louise being Mildred. And it's got these two terrific parts for women, and I think it's a really dramatic story, and I would like to see it as a feature, naturally.
Well, I would as well. I think it's a great book. So congratulations on the book, and thank you for taking your time to be with us today.
Well, thank you very much.
You've been listening to Shireen Blair Breisach, author of Resisting Hitler, Mildred Harnack and the Red Orchestra, published by Oxford University Press. And this is Talking History.